On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, do we want our municipal politicians to be affiliated with political parties, or do we like it better when they are truly neutral and we don't know what party they support? We're going to talk about that one. Also, are we ready for automated umpires in baseball calling balls and strikes? Some people, after the last week with some Blue Jays games, have said, yeah, it's time. Do we really want to go down this road? We'll get into that too. Stick around.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Yesterday, Ward 2 Councillor Jason Farr announced he's running for the Liberal Party in Hamilton East Stoney Creek in the provincial election. You will recall that a few months back, Ward 5 Councillor Chad Collins won the same riding federally for the Liberals. Bob Bertina has announced he's running in this election as mayor, municipal, coming up in the fall. He just served in that riding for the Liberals. In recent years in this city, councillors Matthew Green, Judy Partridge, Esther Pauls, Donna Skelly, Brad Clark, Scott Duvall, Russ Powers, Andrea Horvath, David Christofferson, Dominic Agostino, Fred Eisenberger, and I know that I'm forgetting some, have run for higher office under a particular party's banner. Terry Whitehead considered running, decided not to. Others have publicly supported candidates who are running provincially or federally. Sam Marula was Collins' campaign manager. Tom Jackson helped with that campaign. Narinder Nan publicly expressed her support for Matt Green, whose municipal campaign she ran back in 2014. John Paul Danko, councillor, Maureen Wilson, councillor, campaigned in the federal election for Liberal Philomena Tassi. You can find a few people in municipal politics around here who seem to have no obvious political party leaning, but it is not common. Question is this good? My first guest tonight was a councillor. He was a mayor. He also was a federal candidate for the Liberals once upon a time. His name is Larry Deanney. He joins me now. Larry, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, Scott. You forgot John Monroe, Vic Copps, Jack McDonald.
I forgot some. I know Bill Kelly. Bill Kelly right here on CHML when he was a councillor. So we don't have in this country, unlike the states, we don't officially have partisan party politics at the municipal level. But we may as well have, right?
Scott, not quite true. Sorry to interrupt. No. But not quite so. The province of Quebec and the province of British Columbia
have
parties at the municipal level.
Okay, but let's stick with Ontario then, since that's where we are. Okay. We don't officially have it, but we may as well, right? Because almost everybody is aligned somewhere.
So here's the distinction that I would make. You know, politicians are political beasts of sorts, and I say that kindly.
Sure.
So to expect that politicians at the municipal level are not going to have some sort of political ideology or affiliation, I think would be incorrect. It might be even a little naive. However, what we don't have, though, is a lineup of political parties presenting themselves to the electorate that during municipal elections saying, vote for this slate, vote for me and my team, because this is the party that we represent. And in Quebec and BC, by the way, the parties don't call themselves Liberal, Conservative, or NDP. They have other names, but you can tell by their ideology whether they're on the left, on the right, or in the middle. And so you might be able to re-identify them. So we don't have that in Ontario. It's been tried, even in Hamilton. I remember in the 70s when the NDP ran a slate of candidates, that they wanted people to elect a municipal council. It didn't work out so well. I don't think people voted for that particular slate. So in the absence of an organized a party system that presents itself to the electorate, and some people would prefer that, by the way, but in the absence of that, even though we may have some councillors who have political leanings themselves as individuals, they don't organize themselves to govern the city of Hamilton in that
way. Yeah. However, when you are a candidate who runs, so we'll use Jason Farr, and I'm not picking on Jason, it's just he's the most recent one, which kind of got this going.
Yes.
If Jason Farr doesn't win and decides then, okay, I'm going to run again for council in October, he is now Jason Farr Liberal. Chad Collins, if he did not win, would have come back as Chad Collins Liberal. I think once you've done this and put on the coat of a party, I think you lose your even visual neutrality when it comes to these things. And I don't know if that's good or that's bad. I don't know if it's either way, but I don't think you can go back to saying, I am just politician looking for the betterment of everybody without any political consideration.
Well, so then don't look at the facade, which is what that might be. Look at the behavior and the decisions that people make. So take, for example, sitting council right now that has Brad Clark on it, who was not only a conservative
He's a cabinet minister.
Government, he was a conservative cabinet minister, exactly, yep. In the Mike Harris government, and had to toe the line, if you recall, fairly hard right-wing sort of policies that Mr. Harris, as premier, and his party put forward for the province of Ontario. And Brad would have had to agree to those policies or not stay in cabinet, and he stayed in cabinet. However, if you look at some of the policies that Brad has now espoused as a member of council, and I think anybody objectively, whether it's his position on development or the environment, you'd be hard-pressed to say that he's taken, you know, hard-right positions. In fact, they're not only center-left, but some of them have been outright left in terms of his philosophy. That would be my assessment, of course. But I think not too many people might disagree, and probably Brad himself wouldn't totally disagree. So even though someone has worn the mantle of a party because they've tried to go into a public office at a higher level, or have been in public office at a higher level, you know, the very nature of municipal government, which is a service-oriented endeavor, where you're providing, it's not a money-making enterprise, it's essentially providing services, spending money, collecting taxes and spending money to provide services for citizens. I think by the very nature of the behavior of municipal councils, they are center-left in their behavior because they're service providers. They don't get into the discussions that at the provincial or the federal level or around fiscal policies that would paint them on one side of the spectrum or the other. So I guess what I'm saying, Scott, is regardless of their attempts or participation in party politics, when you sit around that horseshoe, you're part of that board of directors managing the services for the municipality, and are not influenced by the party colors that you carried at other levels of endeavors.
You hope. Your point is your point is well taken, that you are not necessarily beholden to those. But I come back and I say, yes, I mean, Brad Clark, and we got to run. Brad Clark is a good example of someone who has not necessarily adhered to what you might have said. Okay, he's a conservative, therefore he is going to strictly adhere to a conservative platform. There are others, though, that are more consistently in line with the parties that they have been tied to, whether and that they're not required to by any law or any kind of rule that I was once with this party, therefore I must, but that's who they are. And now we know.
Yeah, and I would say, gosh, you know, and I'm going to get criticized for this for sure, but I would say those on the left are more ideological than those in the middle. Certainly, by the very nature of being in the middle, you're not as ideologically driven, and we don't have anybody on the hard right that I've been able to see in my years on municipal politics. But certainly those on the left will champion, you know, the policies around, environmental causes, for example, roads and traffic and some of the police restrictions that they want to impose. They tend to be a little more ideological, but even they have to be pragmatic because, you know, providing public services in a municipal setting is all about pragmatism. What can you do with the dollars that you've got to make life better for those citizens in your city? Because if you screw that up, you know, unlike the fiscal policy that may trickle down and maybe not even be noticed until something happens fiscally, if you don't pick up somebody's garbage, they're going to tell you the next day.
Yes, yes, yep. No, that's true. There's no politics, no party politics in that, just angry politics from people. Larry Deanney, we love having you on. Thanks for taking a few minutes today. Really appreciate this.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
It has been a long time. I don't know why. It's just one of these things that happens. Life gets busy. But it's been a long time since we had our next person, our next guest on, a good friend, a great friend of the show. Love having him on. We don't mean to make it this long, but hey, stuff happens. Bubba O'Neill from CHCH. How are you?
Good, good. Settling in. You got another business.
How is the new place?
It's fantastic. I mean, it's the obvious learning curve for so many of us at the station here. Everything is new, and the program we
except use, for the anchors.
everything but the personalities are have changed, and who knows if that could if will be remain consistent either. I'll count my lucky stars, right? So, but yeah, it's fantastic, state of the art. I think CHCH deserves it. CHCH's viewers certainly are loyal followers of the news. Was it 70, 80 years? I would hope they are impressed compared to what they've seen over the last 20 years. This is a real step forward, and quite honestly, the best in the country at this point. Anyone that's got an opportunity to come by and check out the joint, they'll be blown away.
Did you get, as requested, the corner office with the hot tub and the putting green?
Well, compared to what I had before, I do have sort of a corner office with two windows. I've gone from like a six little 12, I think they were like 10-inch monitors that I had to, follow sports to two, I would say these are probably about 80-inch monitors that
wow.
I can watch up to four different sports on each monitor. So I can watch eight things at the same time. All in beautiful 4K. It's unbelievable, Scott. It really is. I'm not young in the business at this point anymore, but if this is the end of the last couple of years, it's spectacular compared to what we had in the past. It makes the job fun.
If those monitors somehow go missing, I'm going to know who's home to go look for them. The 2-inch, 80-inch monitors mounted on the wall of Bubba Acres.
Yeah, and it's great too. I mean, the volume, I mean, everything. It really is. But there's a lot of learning right now. Mistakes are bound to happen. I've done this before.
Oh, sure.
When I was at Sportsnet, we moved from one location to another and into a building that was sort of tailored for us. And that is a national sports network. And it took at least a month, I would say, before everything was really smooth and everyone's very comfortable. So I would expect the same here.
Well, let's talk about something that is definitely, I want to get into a bunch of things today, but something that is not smooth. And this is from a couple days ago, but I'm amazed. People are still talking about that Blue Jays game from the other day with the referee, Jeff Nelson, who, by every metric and technological piece of equipment that we have showed that he was all over the place behind home plate. His strike zone was just a disaster. And so a lot of people are saying, you know what, this is proof that we need that robot umpire. We need a computerized umpire behind home plate to call balls and strikes. Are you one of the robot umpire people, or are you, human error is part of the game and we'll live with it kind of guys?
I think you can have the best of both worlds in some ways. And I think, I don't know if you really want to call it a robot umpire, but I think a designated computerized strike zone based that can measure up. I mean, you go into a car wash nowadays and it can measure up the length of your car and know exactly where the brushes should go, how deep they should go, or how high or how low or how wide they should go. So the strike zone, it is movable. I mean, based on the size and the body of the person. So we already see it on TV, so why can't the umpires use something that is very, very similar? I think it would be more of a suggested thing to the umpire. I think you ultimately in sports has gone the way of getting the call correct. So why is there an independent strike zone for each individual umpire on a Tuesday that could be different from that same umpire on a Wednesday? So I'm all for it.
See, I agree with you. I disagree. First of all, I disagree entirely with the concept of bringing in. I hate replay. I hate all this stuff. I'm okay with the human concept. Baseball and other sports have been fine forever. I'm okay with it. However, if you're going to have some calls that are reviewable by replay, I don't know how you don't do all of them, because I don't know why a ball that lands out of bounds by 1 inch, lands foul by 1 inch, why calling that correctly is more important than calling a strike three that may be outside by 1 inch. To me, it's all or nothing. You either do all of it or you do none of it.
Well, I think to an extent. I mean, and I heard some, you know, back in the day that said the only time you should use replay in Major League Baseball is to check if a ball was fair or foul. Well, as we've discovered, there are so many different elements and miss. I mean, there was a missed call. I think it was in the Blue Jays' first game of the season, which I could not believe, the home opener, a play at the plate that, I mean.
Where he slid in under the tag. Yeah, where,
yeah,
what's his name?
It was so obvious to me. I mean, I thought when I watched it live, now, I would expect that the umpire would have positioned himself better to make a proper call, but he wasn't in proper position, made an incorrect call. The umpires, gather together, which I like to see that, you know what, they're going to gather and have a discussion and check the replay. And he was obviously incorrect. Now, what I will also say here is, in my opinion, Scott, umpires need to be rated harder. As it stands now, you are gifted if you did a good job on getting postseason games. And if you see that in football, we see that in hockey. I'm not quite sure that works in Major League Baseball. Someone needs to tell me that. I don't think it works the same way. So
no, somebody the other week said that if you are a manager and you make a bunch of mistakes, you get fired. If you're a player who makes a bunch of mistakes, you get sent down. If you're an umpire who makes a bunch of mistakes, you go on to your next assignment.
You go on to your next assignment, and that's why I think that the umpires need to be graded on. Look at our good friend Ron Foxcroft. For many years, has worked with the NBA, and when officials come to Toronto at Scotiabank Arena, every single call is dissected and rated. And I believe the umpires should be just accountable in Major League Baseball to that same standard. So this way that their job gets better and it gets easier for them and that they're able to execute the job at a higher level. There's just far too much inconsistency in my matter. And like you said, the strike zone is certainly one of them, because what it is to one umpire seems to be different to another umpire in the same stadium with the same teams on a different day.
Do you think it would make a difference? One of the things that's been suggested before is if you required umpires after the game to take questions from the media, to answer for their performance, do you think that would do anything, or would that just make everything more ornery?
From what I'm told, they do that, but there's a representative that's there as, players and umpires basically do their post-game responsibilities and pretty much immediately after the game. There's like half an hour wait. And of course, because of television, you got to move on to the next game or get to the show. And basically they don't have that opportunity to ask why a call was made. So for some reason, Major League Baseball, or at least the Umpires Association, don't make that easy for access to the media. And of course, which it extension is to the fans, especially when there's a game that is, poorly officiated or poorly umped.
Yeah, I tend to think that it's games like this, and this one won't be the one because it was in Toronto, and Toronto gets, honestly, in the States, and this is not a gripe or anything, it's just reality, gets among the least amount of coverage. It'll be a game like that that is played in Yankee Stadium or Dodger Stadium that will really get this discussion going again. And I do think that there will be a point where the robo-ump comes into play. Scott, I do. I think it will happen.
Scott, I'm not to interrupt there, but I think that's already happening. This is a reality, right? Like, I don't think...
Oh, it's discussed.
I don't think this is a, you know, this may happen one day. I think it's already going to happen. Like, I think we're just, maybe by next season. And the only reason that it holds back is because for whatever reason, that particular sport has, and you may be one of them, an old school mentality where change is very, very slow. In fact, slower than any other of the major sports that we have here in North America. And I'll say this, and I know you and I have kind of butted heads on this before. This is the sport that better make changes, because as far as I'm concerned, and statistics will show you, that this is being classified as an old man sport. And if they want to, you know, get into the next generation, which they should have done years ago, quite honestly, they've got to smarten up. Games got to be quicker. I'm going to guarantee you that this Blue Jays and Red Sox game will surpass the 3-hour and 15-minute mark tonight. And that's inexcusable by today's standards. You've got to be in that 2:15 to 2:30 pocket, or the kids aren't watching.
Two quick things, then we're going to move on to a different topic. One is your comment about that it's an old man's game. I agree. However, if you look at the fans at Blue Jays games, very young still. So they've somehow managed
to... They're there for the party.
Yes, that's fine. And whatever they're there for, they're there. The other thing, I agree with you also that this is being discussed, this robo-ump thing. My point was, while it's percolating around in the background, it'll be a big game involving one of the big, big, big market teams where the umpire has a really bad game. It'll be like the Buffalo Bills overtime loss changes the overtime rule in the NFL. Right. There is a moment, right. Something will make it go from being discussed to action. And as I say, it's not going to be a Jays game unless it's a playoffs. It's going to be a big, big market team in the States. But I think it's coming. I do. I think it's coming. All right, Toronto Raptors are in the playoffs right now. I don't know if they know they are, but they are. Is this, like, for those who have not been following this, two games in against Philadelphia, they're being just clobbered. I mean, they're being exposed in the worst way. They've got injuries. They've got, in sometimes, an undersized lineup. They're playing against the probable MVP. There's lots of things going against them. Is this hurting the one person in this series that I think stands to have his reputation affected, and I don't know if it should or shouldn't, is Nick Nurse, the coach of the Raptors, because all along everyone says give him a couple days and he'll figure out a way to break down this team, and so far that hasn't happened. Are the Raptors getting bombed a reflection on Nick Nurse? Is that going to hurt his reputation?
Well, I think there's a I don't want to say an excuse, but I'll use that word loosely. I mean, you're playing with, you know, your rookie of the year candidate. I think he's going to win. He's missed basically a game and a half. Now he played three quarters of the first game and it didn't really make a difference. But he's a piece. Gary Trent Jr., one of the streakier scorers, but when he gets hot, he can put up 30 to 35 any night. He's dealing with a non-COVID illness. Tried to give it a go, played for like 5 minutes and just didn't have it. Didn't have it in game one either. So, you know, some of your secondary scorers, other than Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet, are in trouble right now. So that causes problems in terms of spacing. You're just not scoring and you can't keep up to Philly. And you certainly can't keep up defensively, because guys like, you know, Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey, in addition, like we knew about Harden and Embiid, they're destroying this team right now. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, is Nurse going to take some heat for it? Well, I'll hold back that until we see tomorrow in game three, because as the old saying goes, it's not a series till you lose. It's still a series until you lose your game on home court.
Yeah,
I'll remind you this, and you know, I'm not comparing teams, but let's go back to the 2019 championship year when they played the Milwaukee Bucks. Similar situation. Destroyed in Milwaukee in games one and two, and then Toronto never lost a game in that series. They won four straight. Weird things can happen. It sounds like Barnes is going to give it a go tomorrow. Home crowd advantage. Maybe that Jurassic Park fires up. this team. Remember, they beat them 3 out of 14 times in the regular season. I know it's the regular season, but at least in the back of their minds, they know we can beat this same team.
Yeah, it was. It's been ugly so far, and you're right. I mean, you can say you don't want to use the word excuse. I think excuse is okay in this scenario because they are missing a lot of people and key people. And if you're playing against the likely MVP, I mean, look, there's a reason the Raptors won the championship a few years ago. And yeah, they had a good team, but they had the best player on the floor for almost the whole game. And basketball is the one sport. When Wayne Gretzky played, he was on the ice. He had long shifts, but he wasn't on the ice all the time. In baseball, your best pitcher pitches once every 5 days. He's not on the field all the time. Vlad Guerrero doesn't hit every at bat. In basketball, if you have the best player and your game plan goes through him, boy, it is so impactful. And they have no answer for Embiid right now. They have nothing.
Can I throw something else in that, you know, it kind of goes back to our baseball conversation about the officiating? And I know we have a family, as I brought them up earlier, the family of the Foxcrofts, who are well known for their officiating in basketball. But boy, It's been tough slugging in games 1 and 2. The Raptors are not getting the whistle in offensively, and when they try to be physical defensively, Joel Embiid continues to go to the line. I can't remember the number. I'm gonna go right off the top of my head. I could be right here, or very, very close. But I believe the Sixers went to the line 30 times. They shot 30 free throw shots, and Joel Embiid had 14 of the 30. The Raptors, as a team, had 12.
It's true. And as long as you're going to, like, it was great when Shaq played because they had that old the technique against him, Hack-a-Shaq, because he couldn't hit a free throw. And so just foul him. And I remember years ago, way before Shaq played for the Lakers, knowing that they were going to be looking probably at some point along the way facing him in the playoffs, signed 2 or 3 giant stiffs. I mean, it didn't even matter if you could play. Your job was to go out and use your 5 fouls on Shaquille O'Neal and just not let him get anything easy. You know what? Masai Ujiri, I don't know. I mean, again, I don't think his reputation gets sullied in any way, but I think this may be one of the whiffs that he's made in his time in Toronto, that knowing you might have been playing against Embiid, he doesn't have that kind of big body to play against him. Joel Embiid has a mismatch against everybody.
The thing is, the Raptors, you know, have what, I can't remember how many games they won, and they were end up being the 5 seed, playing kind of what modern day basketball is: 4 big forwards and a point guard. That's kind of the way of the game. Philly is old school; they want to slow it down, and they do have this big man. But I mean, he's having
a really good big man.
He's having good, and you know, we talk about the foul shooting as well. The thing with him, too, because it's so untraditional for the big man, this guy is like 82-83% off from the line. So you hack him, and it's, I mean, Shaq was in the 50%, right? Maybe even lower. But
it is a very tough spot, and you don't have your players, and it is. I'm not entirely sure that a week from now we'll all be sitting around the TV watching the bounce, bounce, bounce drop to win Game 7. However, you know, we had that moment once upon a time. Hey, just before we go, and we're going to talk about this later on, but we've got a week and a bit left in the NHL season. We have a minute right now for the show.
Finally.
Right, for the segment. But okay, so we got a week and a bit left in the NHL season. Have you, just tease us with this one right now, have you seen enough from the Toronto Maple Leafs that their style is different this year that you believe they can and will be successful in the playoffs more than in past years? Or is it more of the same?
Unfortunately, the makeup of the National Hockey League and their playoff format still has me doubting, Scott. It's not like they're playing a soft, they're not getting a soft touch early and they can ramp up.
Tampa.
Like we see
Tampa,
so,
almost
so
for
many,
sure.
You know, it's Tampa, probably the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champions, maybe Florida, maybe Boston, who traditionally has given them fits. I can't feel that way, Scott. I can't. And we've been amazed before by goaltending, by goal scoring, by, you know, this time it's the franchise high in wins, the leading goal scorer in the league. But yet,
I can't feel too confident because of the matchup and what we've seen from this team before, even when we've been fooled before after excellent regular seasons.
I talked on the show a week or two ago. We were chatting about Austin Matthews hitting, I think he had hit 50 at that point, or 52, or past Rick Vive, or whatever it was. I don't remember when we talked about it. And my comment at the time was, and I believe this, there's an awful lot of Leaf fans who really don't get to enjoy how great a season Austin Matthews is having, because it doesn't matter. They know that nothing matters this year until the playoffs. Go ahead and score 95 goals, and if you get to the playoffs and disappear, this whole thing was a giant charade. This whole thing was a tease, and we've been teased enough, and we've been tinkered with enough, and we've had our emotions toyed with enough that it's really unfortunate. This should have been a year that Leaf fans celebrated like almost no other year.
Absolutely.
There
was something about last year's choke. I will call it a choke against the Montreal Canadiens that made it that way. I think that was the tipping point where everyone said, you know what, just call me in the playoffs next year. I don't care what happens. Just get in and let's see what you do next year. Because, yeah, you're right. People are, even the Leaf fans that I know personally, that have been following this team like yourself for so many years, that are so, they're so a part of Leaf Nation, they're holding back their emotions.
And yeah, and now you've got, and I mean, it's just so absolutely perfect. So the Leafs are, in, as you mentioned, almost certainly going to draw Tampa Bay, the two-time defending champions, with probably the best playoff defenseman in the league, the best goalie in the world, and guys who know how to win. Meanwhile, had things gone slightly differently, had some of those losses against Ottawa or Montreal or Buffalo, who just killed them, they might have drawn Carolina, who just lost Freddie Anderson, their starting goalie, and will be going into the playoffs handicapped. So rather than, with the great season they've had, rather than getting a team that you would look at and say, yeah, they're probably really favored to win that, once again, you are going to get, I would argue, the hardest opening round series. I really believe, and I got to run, I believe wholeheartedly that if the Toronto Maple Leafs can win their first round series, they are going to the finals. I believe that with every fiber of my being, that if they get over that hump, that they will then relax, and they are good enough. They have the talent. If they can get over that hump, especially against a Tampa, they will go to the finals.
I'm not sure
they can.
I don't know if they can. I really believe last year was designed for them. The All-Canadian thing, they should have breathed through. They should have at least got to the cup final.
Of course. Yes, of course they should have. You're absolutely right, 100%. And as I said, I want people not to say Radley said they're going to the finals. If they win that first round series, then I believe they can get themselves on a real roll, because they have the ability, and that will then take the monkey off their back, and they'll relax and they'll just play. I look at Tampa and I go, for what reason would I believe you're going to win this series? What's the reason that I would point to?
They're designed to break your heart.
That's unfortunately, that's what's going to happen again. Our you and I both have tons of friends who are Leaf fans, and I think we're going to be playing amateur psychologist for weeks after this, because I got a feeling it's not going to end well. But you know, let's, fingers crossed. Let's hope. It's good when teams around here do well. We've seen it. We've seen the excitement and how happy people are when things go well. Let's hope for that one. Listen, we're way over time. Got to run. Bubba O'Neill, great catching up again. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, bud.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.